bells, walls, if you like, funnels, which take in the prana. Of course, there is a science of taking up prana. It's inevitable if you know of something existing like vital energy that you will record what happens when you do this and you do that, and there are exercises for it. And these exercises constitute something of the nature of a science, if you like, of prana uptake. I must have a break now. If you'll take a quarter of an hour break, I'll be back. Let me just finish this section of our work by commenting that the discovery of these sources of vital energy will help change the face of medicine, the medicine of tomorrow and its physiology. I want to discuss the matter of pain now and what the future holds for man with regard to pain. In the future, the great breakthrough in the treatment of disease and illness, at least for those who practice complementary medicine, will be the first-hand recognition that devas, living entities within subtle matter, dark matter, are responsible for the repair of tissue in the body. We can assist them. We can use vitamins, we can use drugs, we can use all sorts of therapies to assist them. But in the end, if repair is required, if there has been an ulcer or something like that, then devas are involved. Who are the devas? The devas are, as I've said, located in subtle matter which interpenetrates this world, as we shall see on the epidioscope this afternoon. Devas interpenetrate this world with subtle matter, with dark matter. They are not self-conscious. They are very susceptible to human influence. And if you can encourage the right conditions for them, they will undertake the most miraculous things. We have certain things in common with the devas. We can invoke them. And we use the same internal fires, prana, of the body, which are transmitted both to us and to the devas. And so, if you have made any study of this subject, you will know that devas very frequently hover over a tree that has a particular structure they like. Perhaps the way it gives off transpiration products. Perhaps the fruit or the nuts or whatever it has produces. And devas will live with a tree until that tree is finally cut down or dies. And that is equally so for every one of us. It's not my work here today to talk about mechanisms by which the devas sustain us and we sustain them, but we do. Every person in this room has a solar deva. We call it a solar angel. I don't want to get sloppy, but I can't describe it in any other way. We have a solar entity which has his own evolutionary or involutionary activity and is linked with us. So we can drive him away, or it away, or we can attract it through gentle practices. One of the reasons why being gentle is regarded as so important by the Christ and so on. The attraction of solar devas. And they can correct illness in the body. If there is repair required, yes. If there are cancers and things like that, well, it's not quite so certain. Bailey, Alice Bailey, says that the devas respond to green and a way of attracting green devas who repair muscle, especially stiff muscle, muscular disorders, is to bathe yourself in green. Get hold of a green curtain, drape, place it in such a position that the sun will strike it, and sit in front of it or lie in front of it, so the gentle deflected green rays help you to overcome your stiffness where the order is, where the illness is mainly concerned with muscle. She also says that devas are responsive to violet. Devas of the green hue, devas of the violet hue. And you can have a violet bath in the same way if your nervous system is feeling depleted. If you are neurasthenic, it can be helpful. Where there are places that the devas can anchor and build, they will replace tissue. Robert Browning was always tremendously interested in the esoteric, but he would have nothing to do with false matters, fraud, anything that could possibly be twisted, he would not have anything to do with. But he was interested in nature, of course. He was a poet. And he was interested in the anima mundi, which is that blue, interpenetrating, etheric field of the planet. It is continuous. In ancient days, when you and I were tribal, we had links with each other. Especially the tribe would have a close link through this etheric substance and, of course, subtle matter through what we will be dealing with in another seminar, morphogenic fields that operate within subtle matter and are responsible for instinct and things like that. And so in those days, some tribal person might fall into a chasm and be wounded and cry for help, and his fellow tribesmen would feel this, sometimes hear it, because there was such a strong connection of etheric substance between them, between members of a tribe. Browning saw this etheric energy of prana, saw it glowing, as he said, from every common bush, a fire with God. It's a heavenly dew staring from every eye, glowing from every hue. These are devas. There are devas of the shining light available to mankind. There are many things that are not known in this world simply because the world would laugh, tease, not give due respect to. I myself have seen many times evidence of body fires, and fire means a fire elemental. So there are four kinds of deva elementals. There are fire elementals, there are earth elementals, there are water elementals, and there are air elementals. Aerial, the air spirit that sang the song Full Fathom Five is an air spirit. I have seen fires of devas within my own body. I have watched them repair a section of kidney where there has been an acute nephritis, something very simple. But damage done, repairs required, like the habitat, and in they come. We can't register them with instruments, but of course we can't register subtle matter with instruments, or dark matter, as they call it, the scientists. When will we observe these in the future? Around the time that science begins to detect, measure, and manipulate neutrinos. Beginning to feel them now. They can get one or two. But as more and more are registered, and they discover that they are the main substance of the etheric body, these neutrinos, which don't respond to gravity, which don't respond to attractive forces like magnetism. They are not electromagnetic in the true sense, and so on. And so when science begins to, when you see neutrinos in your newspaper, don't just rush off, start a little file on them and see how this subject of neutrinos will develop. I published my little book, The Third Eye, 30 years ago in South Africa, and I labeled parts of the etheric body with the word neutrino. And it won't be before long. This is why healers can often be successful when medical science fails, because they cultivate the interest of the healing devas. They must evolve a procedure for creating a healing center. What should we do to get a healing center going? Choose a place harmonious with nature. Out in the country, on your roof garden if you like, you've got to start somewhere. But choose a place which the devas will appreciate. They're frightened off by rolling traffic and goodness knows what. And then slowly encourage them by repetition, sounding words of power, of strength, of its healing. O thou that takest away the sins of the world, have mercy upon us. Simple as that. Very important. Uttered thousands, millions and millions of times by devotees through the Piscean Age. Creating a morphogenic field in subtle matter that will attract devas, and who will then apply themselves to whatever purpose that center is being devoted to. Hence the danger. Hence the danger to employ devas on nefarious schemes, personality, ambition. The forming of a healing center, you'll find it in all my books. And so these fires are there. And the devas, they represent the devas. And to have had an education in histology, as I have, being a doctor, nothing remarkable about that, and being able to see within you or within the body of a patient, the tissue, and being able to welcome the devas with lovely words like Om Ahi, another very potent word for devas, Ahi, and so on. And so visualizing or seeing within you or within the patient, the tissue, and encouraging the devas to make right, that's what they do best. They make right and tend always towards the natural than the artificial. The life force fed by prana flows happily within the body of the man who expresses himself. The person, the human who expresses him or herself. Now, I'm not going to say that again, him and her. Man, for me, means all of us. I can't change my spots now. So I say again that the key to good health, no matter what you do, the key to good health is expression of what you are, of what your soul is. It's got to be. If you're inhibited some way, if you're doing a job and hating it, and the organs are stiffening up, or the stomach won't accept the food and so on, well, you're not expressing yourself. And that's part of the personality problem, is to find ways, no matter what the situation is in your environment, to find ways and means of expressing what your soul would like you to express. We get suicide calls all the time. What to advise? When they insist that they're going to do it and so on, well, you say, well, do you think your soul would like you to run out of this situation by taking your own life? Of course not. The soul probably chose the life, if it was an advanced soul, just for the conditions that you are finding in it. And expression, the ability to express yourself. People say to me, where do you get your energy from? You produce films, you write 80 books, you do this, you do that, you go on tour, and you're knocking on 70. How do you do it? I say to them, I obtain the energy by expressing it. Man is a drogue. You know what a drogue is? The sleeve that floats in the air at an airport. And it is efficient and does its work when the air flows straight through it. Man is a drogue. And if the energy is used up brilliantly, efficiently, sympathetically, with compassion and love, is applied wisely and wisdom is applied lovingly, the energy will come to you. And tissues that are hurt will recover, because the devas love a person who is dynamic with energy. They're attracted. And so if a person's blood supply is impeded, then the flow of etheric force, or fire if you like, becomes restless. Let's take a typical example. I think we can dispose of this now. What's that? Take a typical example of an arm with its fingers, so on. Normally, the energy is entering the etheric body, hopefully in quantity, because the person is expressing himself, whether he's jacking up a car or whether he's painting a picture. And that energy will come from the nadis, especially on the spine, the nadi here being between the shoulder blades, the chakra being between the shoulder blades, and the energy pouring out, streaming from the tip of the fingers, streaming from a chakra here in the cubital fossa, the hole in the crease of the arm. And that's lovely. Energy is pouring out, the person's always vigorous, on top of the world, objective. But if you get an impedance to the blood flow, say there is damage to an artery here, and the blood flow is reduced there, or any other cause, a break of a bone and so on, then that energy gets restless, uneasy. Etheric energy must flow. It must flow. That's why you have an aura. The aura is etheric energy pouring out through the surface of your body. You don't have to worry whether you're going to get any more in. The more you express, the more will come. And so instead of flowing out nicely from the surface of the body, you now have a condition very like pins and needles. You've been sleeping on an arm and you wake up and get up, and it's excruciatingly painful. There's been an impediment to the blood flow. And what happens then is that the energy, the etheric energy, can't get out. It can't get out through the usual places. They're the usual places, but these are blocked. The energy coming down into the fingers is turned around. And so you get this tremendous pressure of etheric energy because you've been sleeping on your arm and the flow of blood, the expression of the blood, has been impeded. And so you get pins and needles if you have an illness, arthritis. It's hell on earth. It's the true hell on earth. It's bad enough when you can't express yourself mentally, physically, spiritually. But to have a disease condition and you can't express yourself, the pain is excruciating. But there is a moral to the subject of pain. This is why I always say, never cross your legs when you are resting. The usual thing is that the tired businessman comes in, heaves one leg over the other on his knee, and watches telly for 3 hours. The impedance to the flow of the etheric force is so great as to affect, in particular, the heart chakra. The heart chakra. It's hard to give it up. You've got an old codger like me. Yes, it's hard to give that habit up, but you must. You'll live into old age if you want to. And so the vital force starts to leave the heart and makes it vulnerable to heart attack. This is why pain is so exhausting. A person suffering mentally or emotionally or physically is a person who is hemorrhaging etheric energies, hemorrhaging from the etheric body. Pain is always associated with a loss of etheric force, a torrential hemorrhage in some conditions. And when you have inflammation, then those fires, not just loss of energy, fires are converted, and etheric energy is converted into fire elementals. I know it sounds black magic and so on, but I have no other words to describe these strange forces at play. Sometimes the hemorrhage is slow. If you have leg ulcers, indolent ulcers, conditions which are the result of chronic inhibition of the flow of the blood, a poorly fed area with regard to blood, then the energy is incipient. It goes on and on, leaving the body. Mental and emotional pain equally produces this kind of hemorrhage. And the loss of energy goes from the throat chakra of the mental body to the throat chakra of the astral body to the throat chakra of the physical body. There is a passage of energy outwards. And so mental energy is lost, it's converted to astral. And astral energy is lost, it's converted to etherico-physical, but it's still a loss. It helps you to understand these things when you are dealing with patients. My own experiences include an inward view of the pain of gout. I have spasmodic gout. It has its qualities. It's very like a rat with its teeth into your toe or into your some part of your anatomy. But I accept it as part of my share of the planetary pain. And I want to mention this now because I'll give you a solution to this. I want to say that the pain can be eased by doing nothing. Is that what you came for? On this particular occasion, I needed to read and to make extensive corrections to a long manuscript. And so I sat in bed and worked on it. My left hand was out of the blankets clutching the manuscript, and I was just scoring it and so on. And when I'd finished the work, I left it exhausted, and that night I felt an excruciating pain, the pain of gout, focused in the space between my left thumb and my left forefinger, index finger. Looking at it in a half light and semi-darkness, I could see, as I've often seen, that normal outpouring of energy was around all the fingers, but in this space there was a huge fire, like a flare on the sun's surface, where the pain actually existed in there, probably in that joint. Gout comes, from my understanding, or not so much from metabolic upsets, it's true, that is a factor. Gout, for my knowledge, comes from a combination of gravity and, of course, the other thing, which is cold. And when you have a hand, for me, a hand outside the blanket, and you're clutching something and it goes on for a couple of hours and it's cold there, and you're putting it under pressure, you're holding a book up, that's the site for gout. Arthritis too, some have the same effect. So I say that normal fire passes out of the body, a healthy body, the energy of the etheric has to flow out from this. But if there is pain somewhere, the outflow, you can see it. You'll all develop this etheric vision. You will see it pouring out. It's much easier to see it in yourself than it is to see it in other people. That's my experience. Perhaps there's the inducement. Now, medical science will have to realize that pain has deeper function. The average doctor thinks, oh, if I stop the pain, that's the best thing that I can do for the patient. Well, it ain't necessarily so. Pain has deeper functions related to causes and results than those that are merely witnessed on the sick bed. If reincarnation in the year 10,000, as I was involved, if reincarnation is accepted by 80% of the world population, then 10,000 AD, if it's true, and 80% of the population will know that it's true, then karma is true. You cannot separate reincarnation from the law of cause and effect. You come back into life because you have set in motion causes from previous lives. You have arthritis because you have behaved in certain ways in past lives, and now you must remove that deposit material, whatever you like to call it, through a life of arthritis. Rigid thinking, rigid body. That's how karma works. Overuse the mental body, come again in the body of a Mongol child, where mentality is hardly exercised at all, but they have very nice emotional and sometimes physical bodies. And so, if you accept reincarnation, then karma is true. And you mustn't, because it suits you to accept reincarnation, it doesn't suit you to accept karma, even if it's the cause of your disease or your illness. You can't pick and choose. It's not even you. It's your soul that has to decide these things. Oh, some people say, I won't come back again, I've had enough. Got nothing to do with that personality at all, nothing. That person will come back again and again and again until the thing that is bugging him is removed. In ways which constantly amaze me. The teaching is that our planet has incurred very heavy karma. The moon was worse, so that, you know, we're not being picked on. Very heavy karma. And therefore, pain and suffering is part of the karmic result of whatever the planetary logos did in his previous existences. Sorry, but this is how it is. And so we carry a burden of karma which Venus didn't have to carry. The Venus chain, if you like, Earth chain. Just as we have five or six chakras functioning at once, so there are globes which are replicas of the Earth, the Earth's astral globe, the Earth's mental globe, the Earth's etheric globe, and these are part of an Earth chain. And all are important. And so we have so much of this pain to bear. Who's going to bear it? No good for the animals. They're bearing the pain, but the animals can't do anything about it. They have no responsibility for their pain. And so it is the leaders of humanity. And by leaders, I don't mean political leaders. The leaders of humanity who are more aware than anyone else about the responsibility they bear on this planet. Am I my brother's keeper? In some circumstances, yes, but there are some circumstances when you're not. And so the leaders of mankind have to help share this. And the classic example was the Christ. And he needed a physical body in order to reduce the amount of pain. And so the suffering of the Christ was an example that was set to those who understand cosmic things, that humanity has an immense karma of pain. And Buddha did nothing else but teach it. And that some of us can reduce that pain instead of leaving it to the younger ones on the path to bear it. And the Christ set the example. And so we have to share more pain than is our individual karma, the planetary karma. Never mind the karma of the root race. And so through this new knowledge, medical science will stop seeing death as an evil monster. The way that they fight to keep some poor devil alive. Oh, he must be saved. I can get him another month. I can get him another month. Give him such and such a drug. Pull out his teeth, screw his ears off, do whatever you like, we'll get him another month. As if death was the worst thing that ever existed. There is no evidence of that at all. The circumstances of dying may be dreadful sometimes, they may be very blissful on other occasions, but there's no evidence that through death you go to a state worse than this today on our planet. And these ridiculous states, like the people who say all the time, instinct is just to do with the genes, that's all. The most extraordinary things happen, like a cuckoo bird. This little damn thing that size gets hold of the other eggs in the nest and pushes them up with his back legs, nearly killing himself in the process. Is that genetic? No, and it'll be shown. And so Medicine sees death as an evil monster to be kept at bay at all times, whereas, for most of us, it is a glorious transition. It's like walking out of one room into another. It's as simple as that. Of course, if you have to be carried screaming from the room and fighting your way into the next, stopping yourself getting into the next one, of course it can be a little upsetting. And so I'm not talking about it today, but there is going to be a science of dying. Eschatology is going to be taken forward, and there will be a science of dying, how to conduct a death room so that the person hasn't got screaming relatives all around him and can leave in the way his soul would like him to leave, gently and without fear, without resentment, and so on. And so, stepping out of the state of concrete matter into the world of subtle dark matter, into, for most of us, into a place called Devashan. We've got no words in the West, we've been hounded by Christianity and things like that. Devashan, not the heaven world, always, Devashan, a place which exists outside of time and space, but certainly in subtle matter, which is of other dimensions. There was a lovely old lady when I was gaga about the esoteric sciences. There was a lovely old lady that lived not far from me in Cape Town. And she was greatly loved. She was coming to the end of her life. And she contracted cancer. And she had to make the decision whether to take the pain-killing drugs to help her through the death scene or not. And she had to face this very same problem. Shall I suffer the pain to help the Christ, the path he set, to relieve the karmic load of the planet? Or shall I take drugs? And I've just told you that if you're in pain, you're losing energy, lots of it. And this is a very difficult problem. She eventually decided, yes, she would. She would suffer the pain and died an excruciating death. Now, I'm not saying to you, you have to do that too. Far from it. I've had my share of pain, so have you. But it needs to be looked at objectively, because the soul would like you to do that, to approach things rationally. And you can't practice complementary medicine without taking into account the soul. It's like astrologers, orthodox astrologers practicing astrology without considering the stars. Now, medical science will have to discover these facts in the future. You, if you are a healer, or hoping to be one, you're going to be faced with people who say, why me? Why me? After all I've done for the planet, why me? You have to be able to give them an explanation and tell them how to conduct themselves in the absence of suitable treatment. You can't cure them. They're going to die. What do? There's many things you can do. The patient must practice harmlessness in thought and deed, feeling, harmlessness. That immediately halts the karma and begins to reduce it. The person must learn about karma and reincarnation, and who to tell them but you, their doctor.